When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 142 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Like to say, we've been joined by the Big Fight Weekly's presenter, Evertonian as well, of course, second time on the show. Chris Hume. Chris, you're looking a bit tired there, mate.
Just a bit, mate. It's a long weekend of fights, some really enjoyable fights, some shocking fights as well along the way. But yeah, I'm looking forward to finishing this and going straight back to bed, if I'm honest, mate.
Yeah, it was very, very busy last night in the world of obviously boxing, UFC, and you mentioned there's a little bit of bare-knuckle stuff going on as well. So yeah, I imagine it was a busy one. Busy one at Goodison Park as well, as much as it wasn't particularly overly entertaining, should we say, in the grand scheme of things. Everton won, Nottingham Forest won. First point of the season on the board. That's a positive, that's for sure. But Chris, I'll come straight back to you. What did you make of the game yesterday? Did you feel that we maybe deserved more than the points?
Your first 20 minutes, I thought we were fantastic. We were moving the ball about. Damari Gray, Anthony Gordon were making spaces. I haven't seen Tom Davis make so many decent runs into the middle, you know, to open up space for a long time. I just thought after the 20 minutes, we just put ourselves deeper and deeper and invited Nottingham Forest on. And I just thought then we went toothless, didn't we? You know, it was still good having sort of Rondon there. He was a vocal point. We all know what Rondon offers. He doesn't offer much, but he was a vocal point, and we were sort of breaking, you know, when he was coming to the ball and bringing people in play. I thought after the first 20 minutes, we were just toothless. And you just saw again where the irony is, we need a striker. We need someone at the top that can score. And if we're going to keep playing like this and take too long to bring a striker in, you worry what's forward for us.
Yeah, obviously we'll touch on the striker situation shortly, but it was obviously Salomon Rondon was given the nod yesterday. A lot of outcry from fans after what we saw at Villa Park last weekend. Obviously, Rondon came on and made a bit of a difference. And starting with the three wide players, if you like, as a front three, didn't really work at Villa Park. You know, we were going long, and it obviously the ball was not sticking. But then yesterday, Rondon comes in and gave us a bit of a focal point, and we did look, I thought, especially like you mentioned, those first 15, 20 minutes, we looked like we were quite dangerous. We had quite a bit about us, the movements, I thought, from the wide players and also the midfielders in terms of Iwobi and Tom Davis was good. And we looked like we were going to be a bit of a threat, but like Chris said, Lee, you know, it was a good opening to the game, and it sort of as the first half went on, we sort of went into our shell a little bit and reverted back to type almost.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those, isn't it? Where when you're on top like that and you start with such energy, you've got to score, haven't you? If you get an early goal. Like I think Frank alluded to it after the game, you know, when you're on top, like if you get an early goal, I think the game then goes on to be, you know, relatively comfortable. The movement was good, like you said. You know, we were creating chances, and it's probably the best we've played since the start of the season. Not to say we played really badly in the last two games, but there's been a bit of a similar pattern, hasn't there? Certainly after the first 20 minutes yesterday, where we just didn't really carry that consistent threat where we're penning teams in, did we at all? And, you know, the lack of a focal point definitely makes a big difference. I know Rondon obviously came in, and we know what Rondon's like. He's obviously, you know, let's be honest, he was never the most gifted in his prime. He's certainly not the most gifted now. The fact that we're left with him as our only really fit striker at the moment says it all. So it is a shame that, because, you know, this is costing us points, and we've got three tricky games coming up after this, which are all going to be pretty difficult. You know, Brentford away, obviously we've got Liverpool as well, Leeds away, which won't be easy. So it's a shame we just couldn't get over the line yesterday and pick up those 3 points, because I think despite all the signings, and they will take time to adjust, I think Forest will struggle this year, won't they? Particularly at the back, they look really vulnerable at the back, and they were very fortunate against West Ham last week. And I just don't think, I think we'd have had a fit Dom in that game. And I know it seems to be we're saying that in every game here. I think we probably would have won that game relatively comfortably. I think it just seems like throwing away points yet again, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really. I read like a lot of things after the game, and a lot of people were saying, you know, we are throwing games away, and we're just accepting the fact that we haven't got a striker, and this is how it's going to be. And I'm not of that belief. I don't think the players are going out there, and the mind is going out there not to win the game. And I think if we look back at the game and we're honest, we had more than enough chances to win the game as well. I think, you know, there was some really decent opportunities across the course of 90 minutes for us to score more than one. Andy Gordon with a couple of chances, Rondon with a decent chance on the turn that he created himself. Tom Davis put one just wide. There was a couple of decent set pieces coming in where, you know, there was one scramble in the box in the second half that, you know, we had three or four bites at the cherry. I thought that we had quite a few decent opportunities. So I think the line of, you know, saying that we're just accepting that we haven't got a striker, so that's where we are. We're not going to win the game. We're not giving up points. It's just
I'm not blaming Lampard for this, by the way. I'm not holding.
No, I understand.
Some fans are, by the way. Some fans are big time, and we are, you know, giving it the trotting out the line. We lost Richarlison on the 1st of July. We should, yeah. I've said on Twitter as well, I'd rather us get the right striker rather than rush and get anybody in just to appease a fan base. Don't get me wrong. I do agree with you there, mate. We don't think we're deliberately throwing away points, but it's just, you know, losing Dom, of all the players we could have lost just before the start of the season, he would have been pretty much top of the tree, wouldn't he, in terms of players you do not want to lose. And at the moment, I think, you know, the Chelsea game was tight. The Villa game was relatively tight. We're just lacking that finishing touch. And also that little bit of guile, if I'm honest as well. A little bit of guile, you know, a little bit of quality in the final third, where it's someone that can just play the right pass or the right weight of pass, or just lacking that little bit of quality. And I've mentioned obviously Hammers in the past, and that, you know, I don't want to keep on harping on about, but someone of that sort of ilk who always plays the perfect weight of pass. Yeah, I mean, you don't realise in these sort of tight games, those sort of players win your matches. Yeah, I mean, those sort of players with genuine quality win your matches, don't they?
Yeah. Listen, we know Dom's a big miss, and we touched on this last weekend. You know, he was good to go for the Chelsea game, and then sort of 24 hours before the match, he breaks down, and the plans are then thrown into the bin. But, you know, we are where we are with the striker situation, so we'll touch on that in a second. But back to the game, Pete, obviously, me and you spoke before the game, and we spoke obviously on the way home about Forest in particular as well. We thought they'd be a little bit better than they actually were, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's maybe one of the slightly disappointing things about the result. I thought Forest were extremely poor, particularly compared to how they played against West Ham. I know West Ham had a penalty saved and they missed some big chances, but I thought across the game, Forest absolutely bullied West Ham. You know, the big physical team, they were really organised. I thought every time they broke against West Ham, they looked really, really dangerous. And, you know, they broke with purpose, they used the ball well. And all of that was absent against us. I mean, when I saw our team, I've got to admit, when I saw that Iwobi and Davies were playing in the middle together in a two, I thought there's a real danger of them getting bullied, by a big, aggressive midfield. And, you know, O'Brien last week for Forest got man of the match. You know, he was absolutely sensational. So I thought it was your credit to us, actually, how we started the game. And for me, Alex Iwobi was man of the match. I just thought you ran the show in midfield. And I can't remember what minute of the game it was. It was first half. He tracked back. I don't know whether it was Johnson who broke through on their right-hand side.
I think it was, yeah.
And I think he ran from more or less the halfway and made a tackle, sort of on the, just to the right-hand side, about halfway inside the 18-yard box. And that just epitomised him for me. And I think we really needed that kind of performance from our midfield to get a foothold in the game. And I thought first half, we were by far the better team. Yeah, obviously the striker situation's obvious. And you do wonder, is it having a bit of a, you know, an unconscious, implicit effect on the rest of the players, because there's a pressure for them to step up and score goals, you know. So you do think, what happens then if a chance falls to a midfielder, or, you know, someone that's not considered to be, you know, an out and out goal scorer? You know, is that affecting the way that we're playing a little bit? Are we playing within ourselves? Are we not, you know, maybe quite taking chances? There were a couple of chances in the second half where I think Henderson made a save and it sort of pinged around the box a little bit, and I think Davies sort of squared it off, someone else squared it off, and it sort of felt like people were a bit cautious about shooting, and you just wanted someone to put the foot through it. And you do wonder if there's a centre forward on the pitch and maybe people playing with a bit more freedom, I don't know, are we opening teams up a bit more? But yeah, I thought Forest were poor, really, and I don't know what planet Steve Cooper was on, saying that he thought that they should have won the game, because let me tell you now, they absolutely shouldn't. They were lucky to go ahead, and for me, they were lucky to get the draw. I thought we were really unlucky, and it was another good performance, but there's only so long I think we're going to be able to, you know, ride that one out, coming away from games that either we draw or lose, feeling that we should have got more, saying, ah, well, you know, the lads put in a good shift. You know, that's... I think that horse is coming to the end of its time, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting, because we look a lot more solid, don't we? And it, you know, we do with obviously Cody coming. I know Tarkowski had his worst game yesterday, but we do look a lot more solid. We're not getting pulled everywhere. I do think in that formation, I know Pete, you want us to play in a four, but in that formation, you need your fullbacks to give you to bomb on, don't you? Now Patterson, I think that comes naturally to him. Mikulenko, it doesn't. Mikulenko, we've said it all along, he's more of a defensive fullback. Obviously, very good in 1v1 situations. He's a centre-back converted to a fullback. You know, I think there, I mean, we don't know much about Vinagre, but from the little snippets we have seen of him, he seems to be more attacking, doesn't he? So I think in those sort of games where you've got, you know, where you can have most of the ball, where you are expected to, you know, to put pressure on teams at home, particularly against Forest, I just think we just lacked that little bit down that left-hand side, didn't we, in terms of just fullbacks bombing on. And you know, his first thought, Miko, bless, is to sort of check and come back rather than thinking, I'm going to create an angle to whip in a cross. And players then expect that. Strikers won't make runs because they know he's not going to cross it.
Do you think, though, Lee, part of that might be because of Johnson and Nico Williams on their right? Do you think he's kept Mikulenko in because he's thought, look, if we get hit on the break, we need someone that's solid there to...
I agree with that, yeah, because obviously, you know, Nico Williams has been a good signing for them. He loves to bomb forward, he loves a shot. He played pretty well yesterday. But I just certainly, maybe with half an hour to go at least, you know, as I said, we've only seen little snippets of Vinagre. You know, with the bit we've seen of him when he came on in the pre-season friendly, he created the second goal, didn't he? Got to the byline, clipped a lovely cross in, and McNeil scored a header. So I just think, yeah, I'm not digging out, Frank. I'm just thinking, like, if you know, you need your fullbacks to bomb on. We do look more solid. That's definitely a positive. Because let's be honest, last year we were so fragile at times. You know, teams are walking through us. But at the same time, we need to have, you know, maybe a bit more belief and a bit more sort of bop getting players in the box going forward. There was plenty of times where we got into attacking positions. There was hardly anyone in the box. You know, we haven't got people making runs in behind as much as we should do, really. And you know, look at the example, like look at the difference Jesus has made for Arsenal already. Yeah, you know I mean, where they've, you know, they would obviously play nice football to a point and then just didn't have someone to put it in the net. Now they've got someone who's not only putting it in the net, his link up play is unbelievable. Now all of a sudden Arsenal look $1 million because they've got, you know, top centre forward who looks sharp as a button at the minute.
Yeah, there was a lot of that I thought yesterday in terms of when we did get into good positions with our wide players, where we didn't have the movements, we didn't have the bodies in the middle, you know, where we were then finding the wide player having to check back in and hold on to the ball longer than he would have wanted to. And that obviously comes with who you've got up top, whether it be Rondon, who played about an hour, didn't he, which was what he could manage I would have thought, based on the fact that he was doing okay, and we took him off for Dwight McNeil, and we went back to what it was against Aston Villa, really, in terms of the personnel and three smaller lads, you know, trying to cause issues for their centre halves. But I think going back to your point on Mikhailenko, I think maybe that is a change that you would look to make even during the game. You know, when it was 0-0, and Frank Lampard clearly looking to try and win the game with the changes he made with Onana coming on and Dwight McNeil, you could then look and go, well, okay, they're not causing too many issues. Let's get Vinagre on for Mikhailenko to give us a little bit more going forward. That passing tends to give us on the right. But I certainly think there was positive aspects that we need to sort of keep hold of and look at. It's not all doom and gloom because we dropped a couple of points at home to Forest. That, you know, the reaction again to going behind was good. We had 10 minutes or so to try and get ourselves back in the game. And we did, and funnily enough, that came from a long ball from Jordan Pickford. And I thought, Chris, it was a great run from Damari Gray, wasn't it? From left, right through the middle of the Forest defence. Really clever run, good pass from Pickford, great touch from Damari Gray to bring it down and slot it. And I thought all in all, that was probably Damari Gray's best performance for, I'd say, probably over 6 months, to be honest.
He seemed really up for it the entire game. I think the only mistakes he does is when he tries to take too many people on and he gets crowded out and then he obviously loses the ball. But yeah, for the goal, it was fantastic. And if obviously Pickford had to sort of make up for the mistake he made for their goal when Johnson scored, and it was a fantastic, you know, over the top ball, great run by Damari Gray, you know, fantastic first touch as well. All, you know, it's all purposeful if the ball's great, but that first touch has to be perfect. And Damari Gray's first touch was perfect. And I didn't have any doubt. As soon as he'd be straight on and straight forward towards Henderson, I thought then we'd be going to equalise. I'm quite secure with Damari Gray when he's in those sort of positions. But at the same time, is we need more of that, really, don't we? We need more runs that, you know, are going to catch out defenders by running off the back of them. We didn't do enough of that yesterday at all.
Well, that's the kind of thing I think Frank Lampard was alluding to, wasn't he, when he said about playing the three wide players across the front. That's what they need to do to cause issues. Use your pace to get on the shoulder of the centre halves and cause them a problem. And that's what we weren't doing enough of. I know at times our passing from the back to our forward players has not been great, but they've got to be seen to be making those runs. And to be fair to Damari Gray, very, very clever run to get onto the shoulder of the centre half from left into the middle, and the touch was great, and it was good to see him have a really positive impact, because he started last season really well, hadn't scored since Arsenal back in December, if memory serves me correctly, and we need the likes of him, Anthony Gordon, Dwight McNeil, to all be chipping in with, you know, sort of 7-8 goals a season, to take the pressure off that central striker, whoever it might be. And I think that outside of Alex Iwobi, I thought Damari Gray certainly deserved a mention and applauded and was up there for man of the match for me.
Yeah, he bent that run brilliantly, didn't he, mate? He bent it brilliantly inside. And Pick was up. That Frank actually said, didn't he? You know, he got asked, oh, is that something you've worked on? And he basically said, yeah, you know, obviously Jordan's ability to pick a pass. You can hit a flat ball as well, Connie, so you can penetrate it rather than just a floaty one. And, you know, but he bent that run perfectly. Obviously, you're worried straight away, aren't you, thinking VAR when everything like that. But he was clearly onside, and it was a hell of a finish. And to be honest, we had that chance at the end to win it, didn't we? And obviously, Gordon, it's a good chance, that. It's a really good chance. I mean, good keeping from Henderson. He was on top of him quickly. But I just think, like I said before, you know, a really clinical striker there sees the bigger picture and either slots it low on the half volley straight away before it bounces, or just shimmies it round him and either slots it in or gets a penalty, and because he gets dragged down or something. And that's a massive chance, that. I mean, and that's what it was the same at the end of the game against Villa, wasn't it? We had some chances at the end there. We just didn't have that killer instinct, if you like, just to put it in the back of the net, you know, to get something out of the Villa game as well. And as Villa showed against Palace, they're no great shakes. You know, Gerrard's under a lot of pressure. You know, he spent a lot of money. They've just agreed to sign Sarr now for another 25 million. So you know, he's trying to spend his way out of that pressure. So, yeah, I don't know what you boys think, but I just think that that's a really good chance to win the game at the end there. It really is.
Well, we spoke, didn't we, after the game? And from where I was sitting in the corner of the paddock, I thought it was literally he had no time at all. So I understood. I watched it back and he had a lot more time than I thought he actually had.
Yeah.
The angle where I was quite deceptive, really. And he did. And this, I talk about digging Anthony Gordon out because it's a split second decision, isn't it, really? But he had the time to really roll it underneath the goalkeeper as he's jumped. And it was another opportunity for us to take more than a point. And you could see at the end of the game when Lampard came on, he was talking to Anthony Gordon and they were going through that particular chance. You could see them, you know, they were talking about it. You could see by the movement of Frank Lampard's arms and body that's the conversation that they were having. But again, what I like is that we've got the wide players into those positions, and that's what they should be doing. That's what we need them to do to be impacting the game in the final third, to hopefully be scoring more than, you know, 2, 3, 4 goals a season each. We need them to be heading up towards, like I say, 7, 8, if not, you know, 10 goals a season. And he was in the right place at the right time. But Anthony Gordon had a few chances yesterday, outside of that one, to be honest. But I think all in all, you know, there were positives to take. We were definitely, I thought, the better side. Like we said, Steve Cooper is on another planet. He thinks that they should have won that game because I thought they were a poor side. I thought it's two sides that may struggle this season. A lot depends on what happens for ourselves in the transfer window. But they were there for the taking, and they certainly did not deserve to win the game.
Yeah, I hope they stay up for us as well. I hope they stay up. Obviously, they're a big name in football, and you know, I hope they stay. I think they'll find it tough. Like I said, they've had to replace, what was it, like 15 players or something like that. But, you know, they've clearly given it a go. You know, they're not just accepting that. They're obviously, you know, they're signing a lot of players. And you know, I hope they do stay up. You know, I do like Forest. So I do hope they stay up.
Yeah, one of your proper traditional clubs, aren't they? Yeah. Great to see them back in the Premier League. And hopefully they have a half-decent season. But one player we did touch on briefly was Anthony Gordon, but the reason why he's not gone into a great deal of detail is because he's going to be our middle section for today. So we're just going to take a short break, and it's all talk about Anthony Gordon. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And Anthony Gordon, it's, you know, a hot topic at this moment in time. A lot of really, really strong links to Chelsea over the past sort of 7 days or so. There's huge interest there, if reported to be believed. Offers have come in, two offers so far, I think, which have been rejected by the club. Big money apparently on the table for him. Looks like Chelsea will be coming back in again over the course of the next week with another bid. All the talk really from Anthony Gordon's side is that he doesn't want to go. That's what we understand. How true that is, I don't know, but I can well believe it. He's been at the club since he was a young kid. It's all he knows. He's obviously from the city. He's got a great affection for the club as well. But from a business perspective, and Frank Lampard alluded to this in his press conference, you know, pretty much everyone has got a price, haven't they? And if it makes business sense, then these kind of deals do tend to go through. Now, in the game yesterday, I thought Anthony Gordon started particularly well. I thought he was bright, he was lively, had a few chances over the course of the game. But Lee, the whole situation around this, any potential transfer, is certainly going to impact a lot of his age, isn't it? You know, he's only broken into the team really last season. He was a pivotal player in our fight for survival, and one player who certainly left it all out there when we needed him to most. Now, I found yesterday, personally, as the game went on, he was getting more and more stick after fans, I think they were quite vocally backing him when his name was announced. But it got to the point, and now I know frustration kicks in, and I know it's easy to then go, well, you've been linked with a move away, so I'll dig you out. But people have got to understand, a lad of his age, this kind of big money move talk to Chelsea, it's going to impact him quite heavily, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, you know, he's 21, so he's not, you know, an out-and-out kid, but he only just broke in. He was just breaking through season, obviously, last season. And there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders. You know, it wasn't just a mid-table season. There was a lot of pressure on him, the club, the players, last season as well, to keep us in the league. And, you know, he played his part in that. And we can't forget that. You know, he played his part. He scored some crucial goals as well. His energy was infectious. You know, Frank clearly sees something in him. You know, he obviously brought Mason Mount through, and he's alluded to his willingness to learn, like Mount and people like that. Do I think he's on the same sort of level as a Mason Mount? No, certainly not from what I've seen so far. But he's clearly got a great attitude, and he's willing to learn and get better, which is, you know, half the battle with some of these young players these days. And you know, digging him out like that at the end, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of that at all. You know, he's a blue like us. And, you know, do I think we should sell him if an offer comes in around about 50 mil? And I've said this to you boys already. I think we should definitely accept the money. If we can reinvest that on two or three players, because you can amortize these transfers now over 5 years, 6 years, whatever the contract is. I think we need more goals in this team. We need more goals in it. And yes, it would be a shame to lose a youth product, but I just don't think, or I've not seen, he's not on that same level as some of his predecessors that have come through, even the likes of Ross Barkley and people like that, in terms of levels. You know, when I look at players Anthony's age playing for other teams who are in the England squad, so you look at the likes of Saka, Foden, obviously a big example, I just don't think he's on that same level. I just think he's a threat. He's technically decent. He's got pace. But there's a couple of times yesterday where he's looking to come in on his right foot. The fullback's made an overlap. You know, just give a little reverse. Give a little reverse to the fullback. He's trying to almost do it on his own sometimes, trying to get, you know, work an angle for a shot. I look at Saka yesterday, his game appreciation. That second goal for Arsenal there, he's cutting on his left. Look how he shaped a shoot, reversed it to Ben White, pull back goal. You know what I mean? It's that ability to be able to sort of see the bigger picture. You know, sometimes, yeah, you can take it. Sometimes, yeah, you need to pass it. And I just think, you know, I said I don't want to dig the kid out. I think he's been brilliant for us since he's come in. But if you're offered that sort of money and the fact we can reinvest it, I think we have to take the money. I don't know what you. It'd be interesting to see what the rest of you guys think, but I think we have to take that sort of money, because I don't think he's on that same sort of level as some of his predecessors. Like I said,
yeah, I spoke about this last week on the Toffee Blues about Anthony Gordon, and I did say there is going to be a point and there is going to be a price that Everton obviously are going to do business at, and I think if you're going to guarantee Everton £35 million. So it could be a £50 million deal. But obviously, as we've just seen with Gibbs White going to Nottingham Forest, and the guaranteed 25, there's £10 million worth of add-ons, which almost as good as guaranteed. And then the final £9.5 million, they're not going to get in a million years. But if you said to Everton, £35 million is guaranteed, we do £50 million worth of add-ons, and half of those are pretty much guaranteed, then the club will take it, of course. I mean, it's always a gamble, because when you look at these obviously younger players, you could argue in 12 months' time it could be worth 60 million. But then you could also argue the other side, that he could go through a season like Dominic Calvert-Lewin has been through, in terms of when he was injured for the vast majority of it, and he could then lose value as well. I do think the money which is currently being quoted is above the value of where Anthony Gordon currently is, and that's just being honest. It is. Anthony Gordon was fantastic for us last season. You know, he was certainly one of the players who you could never, ever argue he didn't give 100% effort every single week. I think he had felt a personal responsibility to keep Everton in the Premier League. And that really, really, really showed, and sometimes to his detriment late on. I think he absolutely just wore himself out just through sheer effort. And, you know, yesterday, we know what he's all about. But then it was clear to me that he was being impacted by the crowd. I've got to be honest. I think as the game wore on and frustrations were rising, the fact that we hadn't scored, and then of Anthony Gordon. Bear in mind, he got booked pretty early on, so we couldn't then dive in and, you know, look to win the ball too often, because, you know, he could have been sent off. So that clearly impacted his game yesterday. But people were then moaning and groaning. At one point, he sort of put his arm out as if to say, "What do you want me to do?" You know, he was getting grief, and that for me is not on. And I get people's frustrations. We're all frustrated. We all think we should be beating Nottingham Forest at home. But don't put it on Anthony Gordon. You know, he's going through a hell of a lot. Difficult for him to deal with all this speculation at such a young age. As I say, I don't think he particularly wants it. I think he's happy, he's settled, he wants to stay at the club. And it will come down at the end of the day to a business decision. But Chris, I mean, where you sit with this with Anthony Gordon, are you very much like what Lee's just said then? And if this kind of money that's being quoted, say £50 million, is on the table, do you accept it?
I think in our current situation, we need to sort of accept this. You know, and if all of us are in agreement, we don't want to lose, you know, such a prospect in Anthony Gordon. But, you know, at this point in time, do you work with the person to build, or do we get in someone that's there and ready that we need? And, you know, you've got to look at the process of like Leicester and other sort of clubs. They build youth academies, don't they, then sell them on for big money. And I feel that that's sort of the situation where we need to stop beheading. You know, it's not great, and I'd rather keep him. But, you know, I mean, turning down 50 million, turning down 45 million that was quoted on Sky was at the beginning of the week. That's still a lot of money. And, you know, there's still, what, a week and a half to go before the window closes. We need to sort of get that done quickly if that's going to be the route and we're going to sell it. But we need it done quickly. We don't want to get to the last couple of days and say we've got 35 plus to spend and we're running around like, you know, headless chickens, bringing in the likes of bloody Sandro, you know, that sort of type of player, because there's no one on the market because we've sat on it too long. I don't understand why people were saying a lot of crap about him during the game, but I think a lot of people following the narrative that's been put there on Twitter, haven't they, by journalists and supposed journalists that are, you know, that write what they want on Twitter, and people take all that in, you know, because there's, you know, there's arguments where he doesn't want to go, and then you read that he does want to go, and I think some people haven't got that clear mind where they can think, well, it's a narrative. It's not really, we've not really heard him say he wants to go, but I think people, they read too much into things, and sometimes they believe the gospel of, you know, a Paul Joyce or something like that. And I don't generally think he wants to go, but it's hard to turn down 50 million at the situation that we're in with FFP. And, you know, it's one of them where you sort of have to bite the bullet. But you have to do it quickly because, like I said, it's a week and a half to go, and we don't be scratching our heads running around thinking, is this guy available? Is this guy available? And you're looking at the lad from Ajax, we're supposedly signing on loan. Their paper have come out today and said that's not even happening. We've had no, you know, offer to that Kudus from Ajax. So I think it's just a bit very strange at the moment. But yeah, on the question, I'd jump at the chance for 50 million and just, you know, good luck to Anthony Gordon, and let's push on and get the right players in that can play now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned for him if he went somewhere like Chelsea. Just speaking from a personal point of view, I think that it wouldn't be the right move for him if we're looking at it from his level. You know, you can go to Chelsea, he certainly will not be starting week in, week out, and then that then stunts his development. So I know he'll be playing with better players. But from a lad of his age, who's going to go from playing every single game to sit on Chelsea's bench, if you're him, you're thinking, well, why would I want to go there at this time in my career? Because he knows he won't be guaranteed game time. But it's one of those things where, from Everton's perspective, as I say, it purely comes down to business. And whether it makes business sense. But Pete, I mean, do you think that the rest of our transfer activity in the final week and a half, or, you know, of the transfer window, is going to be down to whether we can actually sell Anthony Gordon?
I think that's the big question. I think it's really, really easy when you hear these fees being quoted for Gordon, you know, 35 million, 40, 45. You know, are Everton holding out for 50? It's very easy for fans to start playing Championship Manager in the heads. Think, well, why don't we just go out and, you know, buy a £50 million striker? But, you know, it's how that deal's structured, isn't it? How much of that money are we going to have access to? And, you know, let's say for argument's sake, Chelsea said, well, look, we're going to give you 50 million up front, which is incredibly unlikely for, you know, a transfer fee of, you know, that magnitude to be structured in that way. But for argument's sake, let's say that doesn't still necessarily mean that we're going to have all of that money to spend. You know, so you need to factor things like that into these equations. And also, you know, are we going to be able to identify those targets and, you know, bring them in time? The club will have had a particular strategy and a particular shortlist of players. And there's then, yeah, the replacement of Gordon. You know, how then do we factor that in? So I think it's very, very easy to do simple sums in your head and, you know, 2 + 2 = 5. I think the reality is it's a lot more complicated. You know, yes, it would be great to get, you know, 45, 50 million. And I agree with what both you and Lee said. In terms of his market value, yeah, you might argue that that's actually quite overpriced for, you know, those of us that watched Anthony Gordon's development, seen him play week in, week out. It's probably overpriced for, you know, his level right now or his ability. But he's a young English player and, you know, as we know, the market gets inflated. But I do think it's a little bit more complicated than, you know, it can be made out in the papers, which obviously sells stories and, you know, builds up transfer hype and gets people excited. And, you know, of course, people want the club to spend and bring in exciting signings. But I think the reality, sadly, is a bit more temperate than that.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think Frank will definitely, and Kevin Thelwell will definitely have their targets, won't they, 100%, in case that happens. But it's one thing having a target, it's another thing trying to get the player in, isn't it? It's not easy to sign players. You know what I mean? And we, you know, if rumours are to be believed, you know, we've been holding out for Brozier for weeks now. And I think the Brozier thing only happens if Chelsea get Aubameyang, for example, or another centre-forward. I don't want Batshuayi. You know, he's been around different clubs. Clearly, you know, bit like Dele Alli, you know, clearly his first love isn't football. He was awful at Palace. On that note with Dele as well, by the way, it clearly hasn't worked out. The deal was structured in a way where it protects us. It was almost like a semi-loan. And, he, you know, again, apparently didn't really want to play yesterday. So when Frank turns around going, what attacking subs have I got on here? And he can't bring anything on, really. So, you know, you mentioned Kudus there, Chris. You know, from little clips I've seen of him, the kid's a really talented player. You can see that. He's obviously had a couple of injuries which have derailed him a little bit. I'm hoping, you know, some prominent journalists have reported on that. I know obviously the Telegraph in Holland are saying that there's been no contact, but there's no smoke without fire. I think they are. If Dele does go to Besiktas, I think we do go and push for him and get him in personally. I think they're waiting for the Dele deal to go through. Now that sort of player is exactly what we need in terms of, you know, ability to turn on the ball from midfield, drive with it, you know, and you know, those are the sort of signings, the Onanas of this world and people like that. We've been crying out for some sort of structure to sign these types of players in the right age category with a potential resale value. You know, look at Brighton. They're the perfect exponents of that. Brighton are brilliant. You know, they're potentially selling Casado now for 50 million. Having sold Cucurella for 60 million. Having sold Basuma for 25 million the last year of his contract. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's where we, you know, that's how we need to operate. We're never going to have the commercial revenue of a Man United, sadly, or something like that, where we can spend 150 million every year or every window. So, you know, I do think, yeah, if he goes, we reinvest. It's a, you know, it's pure profit. We've brought the lad through the youth system. We reinvest and get two or three players with it. You know,
I do agree, Lee. You know what I mean? You've got to look at, like, say, Onana, and we paid 30 million plus for him. But Leo found him in Germany for 6 million. So, if we can get that sort of scout range sorted sooner or later, then we can pick these players before the bigger clubs take him, you know, for a smaller fee, and then sell them on for a bigger fee. I think you're right. What we say about Brighton is that they're picking up like Casado, and we were linked with Casado at the same time as Brighton were and didn't pull the trigger on him. You know what I mean? They sent him on loan and he's come back, and he's a well-suited player, very good technical in midfield, but we need to be like that and pulling triggers on these young lads, these young hungry lads, getting them in, maybe loaning them out for a season, bringing them back into the first team and letting them flourish. And then see, you know, the likes of Chelsea, Man United, per se, should we say, at this current time. But making a million a profit. And I think yeah, we're never going to have that commercial, as you say, like Man United. But if we can get these lads in quicker for a smaller fee and let them, you know, establish themselves, then we can sell them off, you know, keep it like a rotating sort of situation. And I think that's better for Everton going forward.
That's how you improve the squad. Look at Sangare going to PSV for 8 million quid. You know what I mean? He's now reportedly worth about 40 million. You know what I mean? So you know, that's where, you know, we've clearly got a couple of scouts in France as well. And France seems to be, I mean, we've always said it's a hotbed for young athletes, players who obviously were well suited to the Premier League because they can adapt quicker because they're strong, powerful, quick in most cases. So, it's wise of us to be able to sell someone like that at arguably a higher value than what we think or most people think he's worth, with a view then to basically, like I said, potentially signing two or three other players to improve the squad. Because this squad needs goals, doesn't it? It needs goals. 100% it needs goals.
But I mean, the Brighton example, you know, yeah, they've done unbelievable business in terms of the recruitment and player development. But are they improving?
No, but for them, what is improvement? No, they came top 10 last season, didn't they? That was the highest finish.
They're not going to finish top six, are they? Exactly. And why?
Well, because at the end of the day, what it comes down to as well is, can they afford to play? There's a real correlation between wages, isn't there, and where you finish in the league. I think Everton are the outlier to that, by the way. But in general, you know, you look at the wages, those top four clubs pay compared to the rest of the league is unbelievable. You know what I mean? It's like off the scale what they're paying in wages. And I just think, it's a good point, Pete, but I just think Brighton normally, let's be honest, without doing dealings like that, they would probably get relegated, wouldn't they? Or they'd be in relegation scrap every, like a Burnley or something like that. But the way they've invested, and let's be honest, you know, Potter as well is a very good coach, isn't he? He's a fantastic coach. He's been able to get time to develop the team, play the way he wants to play. And obviously, you know, they've built a really good team. And let's be honest, if they had a top centre forward, they'd probably be a lot better than where they are as well, because they dominate the ball against most teams every week.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen, doesn't it, what's going to happen. I mean, from an Everton perspective, 10 days or so of the window to go, a bit longer. But I fear that, obviously, getting back to the reinvestments of the money gets brought in, I fear that's going to run until very, very late in the window. That's the concern. So Everton have got to have deals lined up to replace Anthony Gordon, get a striker in. You know, the Jesus Ogana Gay deal is dragging and dragging. I've never known anything like it from an Everton transfer perspective. You know, it was apparently done 3 weeks ago, but there's obviously issues and bumps in the road to get over with PSG. But we need to now use the final 10, 11 days of the window to get these players in, because it's going to be key now to make sure we've got a balanced squad going into September. And obviously, before we can look at buying players again in January, to put ourselves in a half-decent position with some difficult fixtures coming up. And the fixtures come thick and fast, don't they? The Carabao Cup kicks off this coming week. And Everton travel to Fleetwood before we then travel to Brentford in the Premier League next Saturday. And we're going to discuss them in the final part of the show. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's all the focus now is on our next game. And that's Tuesday as we travel to Fleetwood. Been there before a few years ago. And it's always good, I think, when the cup competitions kick off. It gives us a chance to see a few of the players who've not been getting many minutes, especially in the second round of the Carabao Cup, to get a bit of time on the pitch. And I think that's what the case will be come Tuesday. Quite a few players who have had quite a bit of time on the bench, coming back from injury as well, we are likely to see against the side now managed by Scott Brown, if I'm not mistaken, former Celtic man. And it's one of those, it's always difficult to predict these kind of games, really, isn't it? Because, you know, we don't see much of the lower league sides on a weekly basis. Fleetwood obviously currently in League One, just below mid-table, 6 points from 5 games. You never read too much into that kind of thing, because they always raise the game when it comes to playing a Premier League side. But it's importantly, isn't it, to make sure that we, the side that we do pick, as much as we think that we're going to see, a few fringe players, it's importantly that we pick a side that's strong enough to beat a League One side comfortably.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wish it was at Goodison. I feel a bit more relaxed then if it was at Goodison, if I'm honest. But you know what it's like notoriously with Everton in the League Cup, although we've done all right in the past few seasons. But yeah, you know, arguably if we turn up, and I hope Frank does put out a pretty strong team. Obviously, there will be changes, but I hope he does put out a pretty strong team. It's an opportunity for us to maybe get a few goals and build a bit of confidence in the side as well. You know, they played Derby at the weekend, obviously, against Lewis Dobbin, who's on loan there. And I was looking at the stats before, and they can see, even though they're at home, Derby had 27 shots against their 9, which is, you know, ridiculous. 27 shots in a game is like Man City levels, isn't it? And it finished 0-0, which is incredible. But I do think we, you know, we should use this as an opportunity to maybe go 80% strength, and then try and get a couple of goals. And like I said, just build that bit of confidence in the team, because we need it, definitely. Look, these games are notoriously difficult. They'll be up for it. It'll be a night game. But it's one of those, isn't it, where if our quality, if we turn up, maximum for endeavour, our quality will definitely kick through. And hopefully, like I said, we can get a few goals.
Chris, what kind of importance do you place on this kind of game? Because, you know, Everton 1 point from the first three games. Do you look at it and think, you know, it's important to try and get some kind of momentum going, and this is the ideal game to do that?
Yeah, I think definitely. And, you know, to get the confidence for our attacking side of the play, to score a few goals and get some confidence within them. And maybe Frank Lampard to try a formation. Maybe we go 4-3-3. Maybe we give that a bit of a go and see how we work with three in midfield, you know, with Onana being protected. But then again, it's tangibles, isn't it? Do you want to mess around with formations? Do you want to keep the same one and try and keep the confidence going from what we played with the 3-4-3? It is definitely confidence building. We need to sort of give these players an opportunity sort of to express themselves, and give them the confidence to build, you know, for the Brentford game. As Lee said, it's tricky though, isn't it? Every time we seem to play lower league teams, not the last couple of seasons in Cups, but we get caught out, don't we? With sloppy defending or not putting the goals away enough. The last couple we've done all right because we've been to the quarters, haven't we, the last two seasons. But I think, yeah, you're right. We do need to sort of build the confidence. And if we can get a few goals against Fleetwood, maybe going to Brighton, they'll have a bit more expression, to express themselves going forward in that game. But this is one of them, isn't it? You just don't know in cup games. And this is why sometimes they're quite intriguing. But, you know, it's one of them where you'll sort of see what will happen.
Yeah, it's got to be used, obviously, in the right way. For me personally, it'd be great to score, you know, 3-4 goals if we can, just because we haven't looked fantastic in front of goal. And we haven't looked like more than one, which has been shown in the first few games of the season. And, you know, ideally, some of those players who we need to be scoring, like I said earlier on, 8-9 goals a season, if they can chip in with a couple, you know, players who don't score regularly, like some Alex Iwobi, who's really, you know, him personally, he's done really well since about March onwards. But now we need to see Iwobi bring goals into his game as well. So it would be good if we could, you know, go there and get a comfortable win. But it's never ever easy. You know, last time I think we went to Fleetwood, it was behind closed doors because it was obviously it was in and around, well, COVID had kicked off and fans weren't allowed in. So much different this time, Pete, isn't it, when you go to a lower league ground and you've got a partisan crowd there all willing their side on to win the game. Obviously Everton have got a small traveling contingent as well allowed to go, but it's much different when you go to these places. And, you know, the pitches are small, the grounds are tight, the fans are on top of the pitch, and, you know, it's a massive game for that club in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a completely different picture. And I think, again, fans might just need to sort of set their expectations that we're not necessarily going to rock up and win 5 or 6 nil, because you know, Fleetwood will have done a lot of work on this, and they're not going to play football against us, are they? They're not going to approach this game the same as they would a League One match. They're going to have a look at us. They're going to be as compact as possible. They're going to play horrible football. They're going to be knocking it long. They're going to be trying to get in behind, you know, playing for throw-ins, trying to get up the pitch. They're not going to try and play a game of football against us. They're going to try and make it as difficult as possible, you know, including the fans, and they're going to use everything they can to get that home advantage. So yeah, the most important thing from our point of view is to obviously try and win the game. But I think just to come away, hopefully with no more injuries, I would take that at the moment, because, you know, you look at the position that we were in last season. I think we need to focus on the league. I think it'd be great to try and get fitness levels up, maybe try and get a bit more out of Rondon, maybe have a go at 4-3-3. You know, get some of the players that have been on the bench on the pitch. But yeah, let's just go there, hopefully come back with the win. I don't care whether it's a 1-0. I'd rather it doesn't go on too long. And yeah, let's just get everybody back fit.
It'd be interesting to see as well, you know, before that game, if any business is done in terms of the transfer market. I'm not saying that they'd come into the squad, but that always gives a little bit of a lift as well, I think, to both players, manager, fan base, when they see new players coming through the door. And obviously, we can then look ahead to the Brentford game. Obviously, a lot depends on what happens on Tuesday in terms of player availability. I mentioned there, Pete, about the importance of coming through the game without any kind of injuries. You know, we've got another week to look to bring a striker in. We don't know who the striker's going to be. We don't know if it's going to be a deal which is done, you know, on transfer deadline day. There's talk over this Garasse is one who seems to be training on his own currently. Brozier seems to be the pick. Like you said earlier on the show, Lee, a lot depends on Chelsea getting Aubameyang in, I think, for that deal to actually happen. The player seems keen on the move to Everton. But we do seem to have put not all our eggs into one basket, so to speak, because there's links with other strikers, but he seems to be the preferred option. So maybe there's a chance to get a striker in. Maybe there's a chance to get the Issa Garnagay deal over the line. Maybe there's a chance of getting the Kudus deal over the line. Who knows? You know, it could be a busy week in terms of transfers. But Brentford are a different kettle of fish, aren't they, Chris? You know, Brentford, we, you know, did the double over us last season. Early on in the season, we travelled there and lost 1-0, although we had a Stonewall penalty turned down. And obviously, they came to Goodison Park late on last season in a game that we, you know, we were looking to win to guarantee our survival. And it all went a little bit wrong, didn't it, with the Jared Brandt red card. And after being 2-1 up, we lost the game 3-2. A different Brentford side this season, it's got to be said. They haven't got the class and the guile of Christian Eriksen pulling the strings in midfield. A little bit inconsistent, you'd probably say, as well. And that was only early on in the season. But we look at them yesterday, got beat by Fulham 3-2. But a difficult side, aren't they, Brentford? A side that, you know, with the kind of players that they've got, I always say, pace and power up top, well-drilled side under Thomas Frank, beat Man United 4-0, obviously, as well. They will cause us problems, won't they?
Yeah, definitely. You know, with Mbambu and Ivan Toney, they interlock, don't they? And they make defenders chase them, but opens up spaces for other players in Brentford. And they're quite a tidy passing and moving team. And, they do stretch other teams when they're on it. You saw that Goodison when, you know, they came up here. As you say, it's early on and they haven't got Christian Eriksen to ping balls or hold the ball and move around and get moving the team around with him. It's a bit different. You have Damsgaard now, but not in the same ilk as Eriksen. He's a very talented lad as well. And he hasn't played for Brentford yet, so possibly he could be rocking up against us. And it's going to be a difficult game. I think it'll be different regards to last season, I think, because we're better at the back. Tarkowski, Cody and Mason Holgate have been solid since they've been put together. And I think in midfield, we've been a bit stronger. Maybe, you know, we could maybe see Onana come into this one just so we can stretch it a bit and maybe have Iwobi and Onana together. but you know, it's one of them with Fratland Pod, you don't know, do you? But yeah, they're going to be a challenge because, you know, I mean, our away form as well isn't perfect, is it? And we do struggle away, and we do sloppy things, don't we, at the back? And you saw that time and time again with Tarkowski yesterday, and just, we just don't need that with someone with Ivan Toney, you know, chasing the ball, because he's not going to miss opportunities if he's given them.
Ivan Toney linked to Everton this morning, by the way. So what's the space on that one? But it wasn't a Daily Mirror, so hit that with a pinch of salt. But no, you're right. You're right. You know, the mistakes, you know, the first two games of the season, you know, especially against Aston Villa, it was our mistakes which cost us two goals. You look at the game against Forest, and you mentioned there James Tarkowski, and he made two awful mistakes in the first half. Unlike him, normally he's very, very steady, very calm, does the simple things really well. But he made a couple of really, really bad mistakes. And I think, you know, they had a little bit of pace in and around them, and they used it well for us. And that's the concern with Brentford. They've got that pace up top and can cause real problems. So if we're going to be three at the back again with the same three, Tarkowski, Conor Coady and Mason Holgate, then they're going to look to pull on Tarkowski, I would have thought, and utilise their pace. You know, we look at the goals, especially the one they scored on the break against Man United, how quick it was from back to front. We've got to be aware. We've really got to be aware of that kind of break from Brentford. But the other side, they aren't they, who, you know, they came up last season. Thomas Frank's been there for a little while now. They are well drilled. Everyone knows their role. And they're building, that I think, a half decent side there, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. You know, they had a really good run towards the end of our season. They were plummeting at one point, weren't they? You know, potentially going to be involved in the relegation scrap, and they managed to turn that momentum around. You know, we do owe them one though, because, you know, we went there. I remember going there last year in fear of playing them away there, thinking, oh, this is going to be a really tough game. They were absolutely dire that game, and they just managed to nick it 1-0. If you cast your mind back to it, we should have won that game. And you know, they didn't impress me at all, and I think that was just around the time then they started really faltering. As I said, they arrested that and then came back strong towards the end of the season. But you know, they were 2-0 down in no time against Fulham yesterday, and then brought it back to 2-2, and then Fulham obviously nicked it in the last minute with Mitrovic. So I do feel, I know you guys have mentioned, obviously, you know, mistakes, and I do feel a little bit more confident in us going away a little bit more now. You know, with the fact that we do have a few more leaders in the team, you know, the amount of times we have in the last few seasons where we've conceded one and conceded two or three straight after it, I just don't feel that, you know, that's in us at the minute with the players now we've got, certainly at the back. You know, the ability to, you know, you go away to some of these grounds, the first thing you've got to do is just stand up to them, haven't you? And obviously have that personality on the pitch. I do think the likes of Coady and Tarkowski, I think that'll definitely help us in terms of leaders in the team. The question is then, the age-old question is then, is you know, what can we do at the other end of the pitch? You know, I do fancy us keeping a clean sheet, or certainly, you know, potentially keeping it down to a goal. It's just whether we can score at the other end. That's the big worry for us, is can we carry enough of a threat there to get a couple of goals? Hopefully by then, like you say, we will have a couple of players in. It'll be right towards the end of the window, won't it, next week? I think there's only about 10 days left, isn't there, or 9 days left, so... you know, hopefully we'll have a couple of forwards that we can at least bring on the pitch, because we certainly need it. But it will be a tight game. You know, there's no doubt about that. It'll be a tight game, but I just fancy us to potentially nick it.
Yeah, like you say, the leadership side of things is important, of course, and going to away grounds and not crumbling is also important. I mean, we can sit there and argue that at a Villa, you know, Everton sort of crumbled a little bit, but I think that was more just down to mistakes, and we showed a reaction. So it shows, you know, in the face of adversity, we can look to try and get something from the game. We shouldn't be going there full of doom and gloom, but again, it's so far in the distance that we've got this game coming up against Fleetwood first, and I think that will help in terms of motivation and getting us on getting some kind of momentum behind us. And we'll definitely play into what happens on Saturday as well. So it's important that we go there believing that we can certainly get something from the game. But like you say, you know, transfers over the course of this week, they are important. And I'd love to see us do a bit of work this week, Pete, to get a striker in before the game against Brentford, to at least give us options. You know, as I say, I thought Rondon did fairly well against Forest. But, you know, when he was taken off, and it appears to be, as I said earlier, that he couldn't play 90 minutes anyway, it would be nice to have somebody else to come on within that striker role who is a striker, who knows that role and can cause problems.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Because, you know, again, on the pitch, that psychologically will filter through to the players. You know, those players know if you're chasing the game, or, you know, it's getting into later stages of the match and the goal hasn't come, then all of a sudden you've got a lot of pressure, and I do think you lose a bit of belief. So knowing that there's options on the bench to, you know, to come on and help the team, I just think it's so important, it's so essential. And it looks like Brozier is the one that we're focusing on, and I think this could be a gamble that either really pays off or really doesn't, because, you know, by the looks of it, he fits the profile. He's exactly the kind of player that we'd like. You know, he can play across the three. He's 6 foot three. He's quick. You know, he picked up goals and assists last season for Southampton. But, you know, if we get 1 point from our first five or six games, you know, how much damage is being done to the squad and the team that he's got to come into. So I'm hoping Brozier isn't the only one that we're focusing on. Because we do look a lot better with Rondon, I think. But I think his age and his current physical condition has been shown, you know, over the past couple of games. And I think bringing Rondon off the bench when, you're looking to get a goal, it's the latter stages of a game, you're pinging balls into the box, you know, fantastic, let's get him in there. But if you're looking to try and build and play out and play off someone, there's only so much time you're going to get from him. So I do think, I really agree with you, Mike. I think psychologically for the team, it's going to be really, really important to have someone, you know, even if they're on the bench, that can be available to come on, that's a natural goal scorer. And I think there's been so many chances over the past two or three games where you think if someone just had that striker's edge, you know, that killer instinct just to hit it when it's in the 18-yard box rather than taking a touch or trying to find the angle. That's something unique to finishes that I think other players just don't have or don't have as naturally. And we're really lacking that at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah, massively so. So to get somebody in and around the squad over the next sort of 5-6 days could really help us to push on and go into that game feeling that little bit better. Especially when, obviously, we're still insistent at times on going long, and it's just going to come straight back when you've got one, you know, Gordon, McNeil or Gray playing central. And it showed that again against Nottingham Forest. But could be a busy week. I think it will be a busy week in terms of transfers. I probably, you know, this is just a pure speculation from my behalf, but I'd expect a couple of people over the line, to be honest, a couple of players in, and maybe one or two out the door as well. So there's going to be movements. It's going to get even busier. Frank Lampard said again yesterday, he alluded to the fact that a lot of our work in terms of this window is going to be done, you know, from now onwards. So just the club are working hard to get those players in. But let's finish with our round of predictions, if we can, for the Brentford game. Chris, what are you saying?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a cheeky 1-0 for us. We're going to nick it.
Pete, you was confident?
Yeah. I'm saying 1-0, Tarkowski bullet header. He's going to redeem his stinker from yesterday.
Lee?
Yeah, I think we'll nick it as well. You know, we just have to see it out, like I said, and show some personality on the pitch. But I think it's going to be 2-1. I can't believe I say I'm going to score two goals in a game, by the way, because we've scored one goal in three games.
Yeah,
that's our own players. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. All depends, as I say, who gets brought in. I think it'll be a draw. I think 1-1. Again, I mean, we've got to get our first win. Of course, it's so important, but I do think it's a tough place to go. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw before we go into another massive week with obviously Leeds and the Merseyside derby on the horizon. But that's us for today's show. Chris, really appreciate you getting out of bed after a couple of hours sleep and joining us this morning.
Appreciate you guys letting me come on for the second time.
Always welcome, mate. Always welcome. And I'll come on and I'll discuss the Conor Benn, Chris Eubank on your show and give you my expert insight into that as well.
Yeah, more than welcome, mate. More than welcome.
Expert in inverted commas there, mate, by the way.
Listen, I've got history. Former boxing writer, I might add. So I've got history in the great sport. I just wouldn't step inside the ring, that's for sure. But no, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you as well.
And that is us for this week. We will be back next weekend, hopefully after a positive week, both on and off the pitch for Everton. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.